Greetings from K9 to Diddly-Dum, Diddly-Dum, Diddly-Dum. End of message.
Happy day, faithless listeners, and welcome to episode 194 of the Diddly Dum Podcast, the fourth best Doctor Who podcast out there. I'm Doc.
I'm Mark.
And I'm the Rev.
Hey!
Now, we've been absent for quite a while, in fact almost exactly 2 months, owing to various illnesses, I'm afraid. And I can't remember whether we actually formally announced what's happening with the podcast going forward. But on the 29th of February, the Fair Sophie presented our own Hayden with a baby daughter, Isabel Rose Gribble, who weighed in at £7 3 ounces. Hooray! And having two young children really does make it impractical for Hayden to continue podcasting. So he's waved goodbye to Diddly Dum for the foreseeable future. Perhaps until the children reach 18. And as Isabel was born on the 29th of February, that should take us up to 2096. I'm not sure if we'll still be around. So in January, you may remember, listeners, the Rev was recalled to the colours after his own 9-year sabbatical from hosting Diddly Dum.
Hiatus.
Hiatus, that's what I was looking for.
I hate us too.
So as we work to return to our theoretical frequency of one podcast per fortnight, although I think it was back in 2016 that we last managed to hit our target of two per month, the plan is that the Rev will record one podcast per month with us and the other will be done with a guest, but I'm sure that will break down very quickly.
We could just say that the podcast is definitely bi-monthly, which means that we absolutely will do either two a month or one every 2 months.
That's it. Our audience isn't going to know, are they? And if any of you would like to pay any tributes to Hayden, we can be contacted via... Oh, that was quick. Hello, Diddly Dum Podcast. Oh, it's Rob and Dave from the Doctor Who Show podcast. Let's hear what they've got to say about Hayden's time.
Can you believe how hard Hayden was done by, you know? Justice for Hayden!
And look, let's be honest, he's also very pretty and that doesn't hurt.
Right, now, before we start, if you gentlemen will forgive me, I'm just going to go off on a tangent which will mean nothing to you, probably, but is quite important to me. Did either of you, in the long-gone days of your youth, did either of you have a favourite radio station?
Oh, yeah, in the youth.
Yeah.
For, I don't know, listening to music, was listening under your bedclothes to late nights, whatever?
There was a couple for me. One would have been 275 and 285, National Radio 1. Yeah, and I did indeed go along to a Radio 1 road show at Western Supermare, I think.
Yeah, I have as well.
It was at Easter, and there was an Easter egg competition that I wanted to join in, an Easter egg eating competition that I wanted to join in, and my mum wouldn't let me because she said it would make me sick, and it was a stupid idea, so I've resented that my entire life. But I do have a picture of me somewhere with my... my 275 and 285 Radio 1 t-shirt on. And I also used to excitedly send off for the calendar when I was a kid as well. So I'd have the Radio 1 DJ calendar.
Is that the photo of you in your back garden in that t-shirt, Mark?
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, we've got it somewhere. Oh. We'll put it in the show notes.
Also, the other radio station I had one of the greatest birthday present, I think it was, that I got at some point around the early 80s was a pair of headphones that had a radio built into them. So they had a dial on side for volume and a dial on the other side for tuning. And with those, I used to lay in bed at night listening to Laser 558, which is the first term I ever heard about lottery. Pick seven numbers, win millions. And so, yeah, very exciting times.
Was that a Wiltshire station or a Kent one?
It's a pirate one.
No.
What?
I think it's like from Luxembourg, possibly, or something like that. So.
Oh, right.
So not strictly a pirate one. Yeah, Laser 558. They played all the hits. And weirdly, I have memories of them playing, what's the song from Young Frankenstein?
Putting on the Ritz!
Yes, yeah. They used to play Putting on the Ritz on it quite often, which they played so often that I learned all the words to and could sing along to, in amongst all the Nick Kershaw and Kim Wilde. It's very strange.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes, or cutaway coat, perfect fits. Dressed up like a $1 million trooper, trying mighty hard to look like Gary Cooper. Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or umbrellas in their mitts.
What about you, Rev?
Well, it's quite similar memories, actually. Definitely Radio 1 was blasting out with two older brothers, you know, obviously putting the cool radio station on. There's a few good memories of Radio 1. I'll up your jingle, Auntie Mark.
Yeah.
To Mike Reed, 275 and 285. Mike Reed, National Radio 1. And Paul Gambergini, who is still on, I was convinced was his show was called Paul and the Genie. Never really got to the bottom of that. I do remember the radio dramatisations of the Star Wars films being on Radio 1 in like little 5-minute chunks. And I too went to a Radio 1 roadshow. Oh. Now, this was in the latter days, though. This is when I was in sixth form by this point, and I think we'd gone to Scarborough for the day, perhaps, and Radio Roadshow was there. And it wasn't like the ones when it was on telly, and they used to say, I can't even remember who the DJ was, but I'm sure they sounded something like, oh, there's literally a sea of people out there. And I'm thinking, well, there's a sea, and I'm not seeing many people. And it was the Chippendales were there performing, and Kim Appleby, who had a single out.
Oh, of course.
Of Mill and Kim, yeah. Now, I didn't have the headphone radios, but I had a really cool radio. It was a plastic yellow robot, and it had red LED eyes that blinked to the sound of the music of the DJ.
Oh,
wow.
So, yeah, that was really cool.
So, Paul and the Genie, did you tune into that thinking, oh, it must be a DJ who does a sort of silly voice to pretend there's someone in the studio with him? You'll catch us doing that.
So it's like some American sitcom, because he was American, you see, and he's there, you go, what are you going to say, Genie? Because, of course, Tony Blackman used to have Alfred, didn't he? Oof, oof!
Is that the Croydonian seal?
Yeah. There was, as well, I used to share a bedroom with my older brother, and I remember he used to have terrible insomnia when he was job hunting and on the dole and play the radio late into the night, which I did carry on that habit for quite a long time. And it was weird because you'd be on medium wave and you'd be wibbling the dial about and you'd sort of get like bits of French in between, absolutely insane jazz music and then, you know, a bit of opera. You could never quite find the pop music again, but then you'd maybe stumble upon Radio Luxembourg. But he got me into radio comedy. I can't remember what station it'll be on, so I'm sure we can find out. But he ended up listening to something called A Proper Charlie. And the theme tune was I Was Kaiser Bill's Batsman.
Do-do-do-do. Do-do-do-do. Do-do-do-do-do. Well, we've had a lot of anniversaries recently. In January, we reached our own 10th anniversary of the podcast. We'll soon be hitting, almost unbelievably, our 200th podcast episode. But there are anniversaries and there are anniversaries. As the people say, anniversaries, schmanniversaries. Of course, these days, my radio of choice is Radio 3, Radio 4, the classy things. But move aside, 60th anniversary of Doctor Who. Take a back seat, centenary of the BBC. Because on the 2nd of April, and I can almost sense our legions of listeners in Greater Manchester moving to the edge of their seats, on the 2nd of April will mark the 50th anniversary of the launch of Piccadilly Radio. 97 FM, 11:52 AM and 261 metres on the medium wave, as I'm sure you are both about to jump in and tell me.
That's what I've got.
261 Piccadilly, stereo 97.
This is probably a strange tangent to go off at on a Doctor Who podcast, but
it's not like us.
It's fundamental to my cultural upbringing, so that's why it's important. Once they'd outlawed the pirate radio stations, Mark, and begun to introduce licenses for commercial radio stations, Piccadilly Radio was Greater Manchester's first commercial radio station. In fact, very shortly after the county had been created itself by that that criminally vile deed, the Local Government Act 1972, the station was, of course, named after Piccadilly Gardens, the enormous open space in the centre of Manchester, which the station's studios overlooked. Now, I'm not exaggerating, Piccadilly Radio played a hugely disproportionate role in my cultural upbringing, and the mere sound of its jingles, even today, is capable of catapulting me back to my youth, otherwise known as the days when someone else paid the bills. And for my generation in that region of the Northwest, the station remains, I would say, legendary for its innovative range of music, its nighttime call-in shows that left many heads nodding in the classroom the following morning, and a very successful ability to focus on the interests and the needs of the region it covered. Because Piccadilly Radio was brilliant at marketing, and this may be the main reason why it's so remembered by so many people from the Northwest. And during its golden age of 1974 to the late 80s, it truly did rule the airways of Manchester and the surrounding towns. Piccadillyland, as they're called everywhere within range of their transmitters. Local news, music, news, culture, sport quickly helped them to audience figures of about three times those at the local BBC radio station. Something you could see around town in Manchester, where every other car literally seemed to have a Piccadilly Radio 261 window sticker in its back window. Our Volkswagen Beetle certainly did. And next time you watch the Back to the Future film, the first of them, watch the bit at the end where Marty snogs, is it Jennifer? Just before Doc Brown reappears in his car. And there are two Piccadilly Radio window stickers in the window behind them as they're snogging. Ooh. In their trademark lurid pink colour.
Really?
Thanks to the guy who apparently rented the film company the house. The guy was from Salford. And their location played into their own hands, really, regarding a lot of marketing, because their studios are based in Piccadilly Plaza, overlooking Piccadilly Gardens. And Piccadilly Plaza is sort of the base of the Piccadilly Hotel, which from certain angles is the building in the middle of Manchester that looks vaguely like the bridge of a Star Destroyer. And the studio had large windows all around overlooking Piccadilly Gardens and Portland Street, on which they plastered enormous photos of the various DJs and presenters and Piccadilly's famously lurid bright pink branding colour. So you couldn't really go through the middle of Manchester without seeing them. Pictures in the show notes, as ever, faithless listeners. There was one point at which you could just pick up a phone and dial 261 and get the radio down the phone free of charge. which possibly wasn't that much use for people who could just switch on the radio, but I imagine that there are a fair number of people at work. Alas, Piccadilly long ago went the way of all flesh, as new broadcasting licensing rules compelled them to split their output, and they ended up repeatedly rebranding and renaming themselves into oblivion. Now, I do appreciate that this will be of only the vaguest interest to those of you who, 30 to 50 years ago, didn't live within the range of Piccadilly's transmitters, but I wouldn't want you to think for a moment that I care in the slightest. And in tribute to those denizens of Piccadilly Plaza, who we're thinking of? Andy Peebles, Dave Ward, Mark Radcliffe. Unfortunately, it's where Chris Evans started, so they haven't got other things to answer for. I mean, they used to, in the days when independent radio required a certain amount of drama output, they used to dramatise some of the early Steve Gallagher plays, which I had for many years on decaying audio cassettes in a drawer until I came across digital versions online.
Oh.
What did Steve Gallagher do? Terminus and
Warrior's
Gate, wasn't it? Yeah. So in tribute to those denizens of Piccadilly Plaza, over the course of today's podcast, as occasional pauses occur, or if they don't occur, I'll force them to occur in the edit, we will be playing a selection of Piccadilly Radio's legendary jingles.
Piccadilly, your music and your friend.
So that should get that should get all of you on your
Wonches.
That should get all of you north, all of you South Lancastrians up on your toes. Who was the guy who used to do soul? Oh, Mike Shaft.
Oh, great name for soul.
It says Timmy Mallett, yeah.
he did. Timmy Mallett did just start on Piccadilly. I used to love Mike Shaft's. What's it called? First, it used to be called the Soul Train. And they changed it to Taking Care of Business, I think. You'd even hear tales of people in Yorkshire and Derbyshire getting in their cars at night and driving in the direction of Manchester until they were just inside Piccadilly's transmitter range and just sitting there in a lay-by for a couple of hours listening to the Soul programme. Anyway, enough of me. What's been happening?
I'd like to think of him as a Noel Edmonds type who used to ring people up and wake them up rudely and say, "You've been shafted."
Piccadilly. First, with news.
So, what has been happening in the news, gentlemen? We've lost quite a few people, haven't we, since last we broadcast. Pamela Salem.
Yeah. Toos
in Robots of Death, Professor Jensen in Remembrance.
Professor, yeah.
And something which could have perhaps wrecked your life, Rev. How had she been successful?
She wasn't.
She actually auditioned for the role of Leela.
Yeah, well, we know why she didn't get the part.
I can't remember who got it in place of her. Just imagine. Leela in an exaggerated headdress. We also lost John Savidant, who played the Squire.
I say.
In The Visitation. I say he played the Squire in The Visitation. Born in Guernsey, which I didn't know. The family escaped the German-occupied island in 1940 and settled in Ashton-under-Lyne, Greater Manchester. Now, Ashton-under-Lyne...
I said Ashton.
I think living under Nazi occupation might have been preferable. Something I was reading on an obituary of his, he tended to specialise in sardonic establishment types, bossy ministers and despicable toffs. His air of haughty disdain and undercurrent of testiness came easily to him. He could have played me, couldn't he?
He was that kind of character in Clockwork Orange, wasn't he? He was very, sneaky. Yeah.
And he was brilliant in Blake 7.
Yes, I was going to say. Orbit.
Michael Jason's gone. The Valleyard.
We had the pleasure of seeing him at one of the Capitals recently, didn't we? Sparring with Colin Baker.
Of course, yes, yeah.
Colin Baker said something about Brexit, and Michael Jason said to him, "Well, you voted for it," quite angrily.
That's right. Yes.
Ooh.
That was fascinating, isn't it? The Valiad that, again, these days of Doctor Who, where these people say, oh, you're fiddling around with it with the Renegade Doctor and like, having two David Tennants running around. But there they were all them years ago, putting in this little, you know, little caveat into the Doctor's regenerations. It was mind-blowing.
But what really surprised me in my reaction to it was the news of the death of Dave Myers from the Hairy Bikers.
Aww. Yeah. Yeah, who I've met.
Have you? Was he nice?
Yeah. They were really good. I saw them do a live show in York, which was a bit like, it was sort of like a bit of humour, a bit of history about them and, you know, how they made friends. And then they did a bit of cookery live on stage and went and had a picture taken with them at the stage door and got some signatures. And Dave said to me, oh, Kingy, come over here. There's your little brother. And he came out of his picture. He's like, come on out, kid, let's have a picture. Yeah, it was a very nice, jolly meeting, as much as you'd want them to be the way they were.
Well, do you know, I'm not teasing anyway, but I'm not sure which of the two, whether it's one of the two in particular, or just a combination of the two. Remind me strikingly of you, Rev. I'm talking mean in a nice way.
I've yet to reveal my parentage. But of course, what's his connection with Doctor Who? He was assistant makeup artist, wasn't he? In which one was it? It was a Colin Baker one, wasn't it? Am I right thinking?
Oh, it's Vengeance of
Vengeance of Varos, yeah. But I'll tell you what, there is another little tenuous link here, because I know we like these little tangents, and we've got to make Doc work hard in the show notes, haven't we? If he wants to seek out the video for one of my greatest hits, Arthur C. Clarke, on YouTube, you'll find Dave Myers sat in a little rocket ship featuring in that video.
Oh, well, Oh, well, look at that.
I didn't get his permission or anything, you understand.
I am really glad that they're so nice, because I was really very, very poorly indeed. Well, I had renal failure and I ended up in hospital, not surprisingly, in quite a bad way. And I was in intensive care for a few days. And when I started coming out of it, obviously I was in all sorts of distress and fear, frankly. And obviously it's a very upsetting time for me. And I remember they finally moved me into my own little room for a little bit. And I remember the nurse pulled over one of those TV screens that pulls out in front of you. Yeah. She pulled over this TV screen and I had no idea what time of day or night it was. So she put the telly on, gave me the remote, and I flicked through the channels for a bit. And then I settled on the Hairy Bikers cooking program. And there's something about the wholesomeness, the organic goodness and the genuine niceness, the chemistry between those two, that just, I remember thinking for the first time in days, I just remember suddenly feeling all that tension starting to leave me for a bit, and just for like 30 minutes, a blissful 30 minutes of just sitting there watching the Hairy Bikers. So, you know, all that stress just left me for a little bit. And it calmed me down, and it's just, you know, television has brilliant power to do that sometimes. I still remember one of the things they cooked was scallops. I wasn't a vegetarian at the time, and I was thinking, I might have to try scallops when I get out of here. I never did. So, yeah, he came across like really good guys.
Well, I've read their joint biography, which is called Blood, Tires and Sweat or something like that. And they start off by, one of them writes the first chapter, which is about something in his early childhood. And then it will move to the other one writing a chapter about the same period. It will go on and on until they reach the point where they meet. And you can quite see why they would be not just friends, but possibly soulmates, because they have, despite coming from opposite sides of the country, I think Si comes from Newcastle, doesn't he? Dave comes from Barrow in Cumbria.
Barrow in Furness.
Cumbria. Another criminal result of the Local Government Act 1972. They had extraordinarily similar lives. Around about the age of between 7 and 10, one of their parents becomes seriously ill And they effectively spend a lot of their youth looking after their own parents. They're both quite seriously bullied at school. And as you work your way through their early life, you can see actually, because sometimes you, as you go from chapter to chapter, you have to remind yourself by looking at the title chapter which of them is talking, because they seem so similar. But yes, Dave was originally makeup and hairpieces guy for the BBC, and then became not independent. He went freelance, and they met each other up in the Northeast during a film, and an even closer relationship I have. You may have met him, Andy, but I was scrubbing two of my roasting tins not a while ago, and I said, "Oh, what's this in the middle of it?" And it turns out that, unbeknownst to me, I'd bought two Hairy Bikers branded roasting tins when I bought them. So I thought, beat that if you can.
I didn't have roasting tins. I had a mug that said hot and hairy. That's as much as I had.
Reb, enough of you. We're talking about the Hairy Bikers here.
Yeah, of course.
So, sad loss. I thought that Si's statement that he released on his death was very, very touching.
Yeah.
The best music on the best station.
So, what have we been doing? Mark, you've been to the land of your fathers, haven't you?
Yes, I certainly have. I managed a trip back to Cardiff, which was great. Visited a couple of Doctor Who locations, which I'll be discussing later in the show. So that was nice. I didn't make it to... Normally when I go over to Cardiff, I normally pop into Oldbourne on the way back home, but I didn't have time this year, unfortunately. We'd spent too long dallying at the... trying to escape the village from Children of the Stones. So... we got stuck there for a while, and we're a bit late hitting the motorway, so just managed A3 this time.
With an eye-watering parking cost, I understand.
Oh, God, yeah, £7.
What the hell?
I don't know. At least the money's hopefully going back into the area. So, although several of the stones now are fenced off so that you can't get to them, which is the first time I've ever been there, and that's been the case. Yeah, for erosion control, which I'm guessing means people touching them a lot and them...
Yes, same problem, so...
I mean, to be fair, if you go to a big stone circle like that and you don't walk around touching all the stones, you feel like you've gone home empty-handed, frankly. So it's a part of the experience, but...
So have you been up to anything either Doctor Who-wise or just generally interesting in your life, Rev, since last we spoke?
I've been near the land of your fathers, maybe. I went to this place called Weatherfield, which was my birthday present to go to Weatherfield.
What?
And I had a tour of this street called Coronation Street and some of its surrounding streets, which was brilliant. But one thing I would like to point out was that on the side of the police station, there is screwed a little tin plate plaque, like you may well be able to purchase off the internet, of the police phone box panel, public phone box sign. That's hidden on the Coronation Street set.
Pull door to open. Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. So I have got a picture of that. I did take a picture of that. I thought that was a nice little touch.
Did you get a tour guide with you?
Did get the tour. Oh, yeah, it was brilliant. It wasn't one of the cast members. They do those, but the guy was absolutely fantastic. Obviously knew a lot about telly and told us lots of tricks and secrets.
What's the sort of the big beard, was it?
I can't recall if he had a beard or not. I was in awe of some of the architecture.
Because Matt Charlton, who took over with Hayden following your early co-hosting, used to manage the tour guide team at Granada Studios. On the Coronation Street set.
Ah, well, he had a very booming voice. Bit like that.
Yeah, but he works for the BBC now, doesn't he, doing tours?
Oh, no, of course, at Media City. Did he used to say that the question he was asked most often by people touring the Coronation Street set was, is the sky real?
Well, Well, to be an anorak, some of it isn't, because there are some buildings that they digitise out in case they ever move set again, because they had to rebuild part of the old set that was in the back, and it was a pain to do so that they... I did also see... I saw John Savidant's hat and apron. So there's that little link there as well. But I'll tell you an even more bizarre link, because we discussed this last time. I'm actually a very big fan of the artist Lowry, who we brought up slightly in an anecdote where you misheard the lyrics of the Match.Cats and Ogstock.
I was representing the city of Hull for many years.
Well, interestingly enough, I went to the Lowry and I bought two prints, which now are ready to adorn two walls near Hull.
Oh, wow.
Oh, lovely. Which ones did you get?
Well, I've got two. One of them is called Sailing Ships, which has got some nice brightly coloured sailing ships on it. And the other is called the Organ Grinder, which is, it's one of his street scenes, but it's slightly different because he uses quite a bright palette on it. So he's got quite orangey and reddy buildings on it, which appeals to my colour sense. But yeah, it's a great place to go. There's some marvellous.
The Organ Grinder, or if Lowry had painted it 50 years later, he'd probably have called it the Podcast Editor.
Exactly, yeah.
I did have one other thing, apart from going back to Cardiff. I was in Herne Bay, once the home of Sci-Fi by the Sea, the other day.
Oh, yes.
I was looking at a charity shop in there, and I was in a Demelza charity shop, or op shop for our listeners down under. And do you remember when Brandy Bond goes, where's our Brenny? Brendan was on the show. He brought to the museum.
Brenny!
He brought to the museum the Destiny of the Doctor's PC CD-ROM computer game.
Indeed. Yes, of course, yes.
I found my own copy of it in a charity shop for £10.
Oh.
Which isn't a bad price for it, actually, because it goes from anything from like 20 to 40 quid online. And so it's got all the bits with it and stuff. But at the moment, I'm still in the process of downloading third-party software in an attempt to try to get it to function on my actual computer, which is slightly disappointing.
I think Mark actually texted me from Herne Bay saying, should I splash out 10 quid on this? And then about a couple of hours later, he said he was home and he texted me again saying, it doesn't work on my bloody computer.
Yeah, oh well, never mind. But it did lead me to down an interesting, you can be the judge of that, listener. But it did lead me to an interesting rabbit hole where I was checking out the price of it online and seeing how much it went for on eBay and stuff. And I got lost in the world of Doctor Who custom action figures.
Oh, right.
And, yeah. Crazy.
For people who don't know, there's clearly a big market in, you know, there's a lot of characters and monsters over the years who still aren't available in action figure form. So some entrepreneurial people on eBay make their own, and they vary from the stunningly brilliant to the rather...
They're horrific, aren't they? Let's face it.
Yeah, horrific. Some of them are horrific. They don't... I don't mean to mock anyone's attempts and handicraft, but some of them do look like an attempt for a quick buck. Like, for instance, you can get a slightly battered-looking TARDIS that somebody's just painted pink and try and sell it for 60 quid as the Happiness Patrol TARDIS.
You say try, though, but these things do sell. We could say we don't mean to be rude and they're horrific, but they don't care because someone's bought them.
No, well, this is true. The thing at the time that particularly caught my eye, which led me on this down this rabbit hole, was they had this, unfortunately, problem is I can't find it now, so I'm going to try and describe, because I've gone back to this a couple of weeks later, and I can't find the damn thing. So I'm starting to wonder if it's a part of my fever dream from when I was ill. But they had a 10th Doctor custom figure, and this 10th Doctor custom figure was essentially, they'd taken the jacket off a Tom Baker Zygons figure. So he's got like a scarf on.
Yeah.
And he's got the tartan scarf. And they've just taken Tom Baker's head off and stuck David Tennant's head on it and called it a custom figure. and I wanted 40 quid for it, and I never did see if it sold. But it led me to a it led me to look at more of these. And, can we play a quick little game?
Yeah, go on.
Do we have time? Right, then. Okay. What I've done is I've obviously we were all magnificent athletes in our youths, and so we all know what it's like when you're team captain and you have all the kids lined up in front of you and you have to pick.
No, I was always the kid to be lined up.
So what I've done is I presented you with a... There is a list of figures for you. We have an Asylum Dalek, Beep the Meep, Bessie, 15th Doctor, Ancient One from Curse of Fenwick, Hemavore in other words, I think, Jackie Tyler from Rose, Jimbo the Robot from Wild Blue Yonder, Marshman, Full Circle, Monk from Extremis, Mrs. Flood from the Church on Ruby Road, a Yeti from Web of Fear, and obviously one of my most sought-after figures, Zoe from Invasions / Mind Robber.
All right, I see. So have we got a photo round here?
And what we're going to do is basically, and we're going to see which of you picks the most money's worth of figures from the list. So
are these the ones that are self-made by fans?
Yes, or they're adjusted
right.
Other ones. I'm tossing a coin. Rev, would you like to call?
Heads.
It is heads, and so you get to go first.
So I'm going to go for the one that I think goes for the most.
Yes.
Well, I'll go for the one that I see as most desirable there, that I'd like on my shelf, and that would be Bessie.
Oh.
You've gone for yes. Bessie. Right, okay.
I'm going for Beep the Meep.
And you're going for Beep the Meep.
What'll happen here, listeners, is that as the Rev and I pick options from the list of custom-made figures, they'll be displayed on the diddly-dum screen. If you want to join in yourselves, you can find them on our Tumblr page at diddlydumpodcast.tumblr.com, links to which can be found on our blog at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com.
All right, so Bessie sold for... Well, that's Bessie. Now, Bessie sold for £350.
Bloody, what? I mean, yes, I can. Just in case I know who is selling it, I can quite understand that. How much?
£350.
Jeez.
Are these life-sized?
No. Well, yeah, you'd expect to be able to take it down to shops for that, wouldn't you? All right, Beep the Meep.
That's not possible, is it?
No. Would you like to guess how much that went for?
I don't think it's over 350.
If it's not in triple figures, it's at least, you know, 87 quid or something like that.
I would say... we'll play this like we're playing a game show. You've gone for 87, Rev. I'm going to say 88.
Oh, no, it's 78.
Oh, no!
Would you rather do it like that? Do you think that'd be more fun, doing it like that?
So you could buy so much actual nice stuff with that.
Right. I know.
Buy yourself some Daleks.
So, Doc, who would you like to pick?
Okie dokie. I'm going to pick the Marshman.
You've gone for the Marshman from Full Circle?
I'm going to go with Jimbo the Robot. Because he was quite cute, wasn't he? So people might like him.
He was very Marvin the Paranoid Android, wasn't he?
He was.
Okay, well...
Well, now that I've seen it... I wish I'd gone for something else.
You never know, though.
£52.
Hi, O'Lara.
£37.80.
Oh, I'm afraid you're both way out, but Andy is closer. It went for £1.20.
Oh, wow. These things are very difficult to call. I mean, you just... If you're the person that desires one of these things...
Right, I can't wait to show you. Right, hold on. Right. This is special.
Pictures of all of these, of course, listeners, can be seen on our Tumblr page, in links to which can be found on our... You all right, Mark? In our show notes.
That's not even what I was imagining in my head. I was thinking someone's going to have done things to a Wally or something. That's not even made of action figure, shall we call the material.
I don't know what it is. It's like plasticine.
It looks like it's been chiselled out a bit of flint.
All I can see is someone's melted Knickerbocker glory.
That's absolutely weird. Who would buy that?
Would you like to guess how much that went for?
I hope not a lot. Bizarre. I don't know whether it's made out of animal, vegetable or mineral. I think a couple of some people who thought it was a good laugh had a bidding war and it's gone for £5.80.
£5.79.
£49.99.
No!
What's wrong with people?
So,
you know, you could 3D print one for less than that, and, you know, you got a mate who knows how to paint things.
Okay, Rev, you're trying to pick first.
Well, in honour of Mr. Anita Dobson, the great Brian May, I will go for Mrs. Flood.
I'm going to go for Zoe. That'll make it fairer, because then they're both humans, and they've got an equal chance of being dreadful.
Before we go any further, I can't imagine this. Is that the glittery outfit, the Zoe one?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Because I'm just looking forward to seeing glitter.
Then here is Mrs. Flood.
Oh, actually, that's not too bad, is it?
Actually, that is quite good. Just looks like a generic old woman, but...
At least she's got a face, unlike, you know, one of the official...
I just want to hazard a guess here, but looking at that costume, is that Rory?
Oh, do you know what? That probably is, isn't it?
Yes.
How bizarre. Someone's looked at Mrs. Flood and then looked at their bit box and gone, Rory. Wow.
How much do you think Mrs. Flood went for, Rev?
£18.50.
What about you, Doc? Any advance?
Oh, no, I did £18.50.
£18.51.
You're such a bitch when it comes to this, aren't you? You're right there, Doc. It's £19.99.
Oh, well.
I tell you what, we were pretty good on that one.
What does he say? Good guess to start with.
It's a good guess to start with.
And there's Zoe. Oh, that isn't too bad,
it's
is
all
it?
Right, isn't it? Actually, I would pay for that.
But how much would you pay, Doc?
Have they thrown glitter at it? If I was Fraser Hines, I would pay £25 for it. No. £40.
Oh, I see. What's this, the bidding room?
What about you, Rev?
Higher or lower than 40, my love?
97.
Ooh.
You are closer.
I really like it.
It went for £80.
Wow.
Oh, not bad. Not bad.
£80. Right then, Doc, it's your turn to...
The 15th Doctor.
You'll go for the 15th Doctor. Right.
You can only buy the 15th Doctor. I've seen it. Someone else has decided, no, I can do better.
What would you like to pick?
Big fan, got to be Jackie Tyler.
Well, I think you're both going to be absolutely delighted with your choices. Here's the 15th Doctor for you, Doc. They seem to have left out about about a foot of his legs. His tiny little legs, massive feet.
That is that his moustache?
Yes.
It looks like General Melcher.
It does. Bah.
I don't know who he looks like. He looks like the guy from Hello, Hello who goes, he's I, Leclerc.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? That's his tash.
Sorry, which one of you picked the... Was that you, Doc? Picked the...
It was, I'm going for pounds.
How low did £8?
I think someone would like that. I'm going 180. 180, super smashing lovely.
Weirdly, the rev is closer because the rev is only £85 out. Doc is 90.
Hey, Mark, I'm impressed at your mental arithmetic.
Yeah. Yeah, we bow before you, Adric.
Right, it was, oh God, it's Jackie Tyler, isn't it? Wait till they get a load of me, as Jack Nicholson said or something. I have to tell you, your brain might not accept the message that your eyes are trying to relate to it. Here she goes, the inimitable. I think for Christmas I might do a who the hell is this action figure of? You know they had, all over the internet, they had that picture of that Glaswegian Willy Wonka experience, and they had that picture of the sad-looking Oompa Loompa. This is kind of like her in action figure form, if she's wearing a pink nightgown and pink fluffy slippers.
She's like one of those aliens off Star Wars, where at the back of their head ends in two sort of tentacles that they sometimes fold over the front of their shoulders.
Its condition was used. So how much would you, a Jackie Tyler fan, be willing to pay for that, Rev?
Her feet look like she's almost sort of like flirting, or she's creeping like a secret lemonade drinker. I'm struggling to work out lots of things. Is that a surgical gown? Her left elbow looks broken. She's like contorting back into shape. It's like a zombie.
Yeah, I think it's from when she's flirting with the ninth doctor, isn't it? And she's saying, oh, you were...
There's some bulk on that middle section of the figure as well, isn't there?
That's no way to talk about Jackie Tyler.
I think somebody has looked at this. It's like in Red Dwarf where Crichton sees the Marilyn Monroe robot, which looks nothing like Marilyn Monroe, goes, goodness, Marilyn Monroe. I'm saying that I'm building up to a big price, but I'm actually going to go £39 on this one.
How or lower, Doc? Higher than £39 or lower?
Lower.
Oh, you did. Oh, you did well to go low there. It's £38.
Oh, it just.
Oh, but a good guess to start with.
Rev was £1 out, and you've stolen it from him.
Wow.
Doc. Oh, no, it's Rev's turn to pick first, isn't it?
Now, right, listen. I'm not being funny, but I know what a Vervoid's head looks like, so whatever the views as the basis of this, I don't know if I want to know. Stick with the Vervoid. Go on.
Okay. And, Doc?
The Asylum Dalek.
Yeah, well, here we are. Here's the Vervoid, and it's perhaps not quite the disaster you're expecting.
That's not what I was expecting. That is very good.
It is, isn't it?
No, it's not too bad.
It's a little more sexually explicit than I remember, actually.
I mean, I suppose it depends whether you're buying it for Doctor Who memorabilia purposes or as a marital aid.
It does look like a lot of fun, doesn't it?
There's so many questions, but not for this podcast.
Yeah. So I'm saying £35.
All right, what do you reckon, Rev?
Lots more than that, I'm sure. There's a Facebook group I'm on that's for art teachers showing off work by their... I'm sure anyone can join. were showing off work by their pupils and students who were trying to be edgy. And this is very much the kind of thing that crops up. Is he wearing a standard issue military jumper from UNIT under there?
Oh, just around his neck. Looks like it, doesn't it?
I think that this could well be UNIT's troop that's been glitterised, shall we say, for want of a better verb.
As opposed to Zoe, who was glitterised.
I am going to go with £97.
Oh,
gosh. This is the best of all, this one.
You're closest again, Rev. It's £128.66.
No way.
Yeah.
I've got the equipment and ability to do these.
Wow, it's busy. Right, next up is the Asylum Dalek. Look at this. Now, can somebody describe this? I'm not sure I can. Can I just read you a bit of the listing out?
The problem is it seems to be made out of several different Dalek toys at different scales. The dome and the collar are the same height as the skirt of the Dalek.
The item description from the seller. This is a custom Doctor Who Asylum Dalek.
No way, it's shot-bought.
It has no eye or sucker arm, and the gun has been snapped off for a abandoned effect. Also, wow. The head is just placed on and can be removed for display, as seen in the photos. Please examine the pictures, as this is the actual item you will receive. Right, Rev, what would you bid?
This broken Dalek that's been melted on the hot ring.
Yes!
And then painted. I think I might go crazy with this one. £250.
£3.16.
Doc is closer. It went for £13. But even so, I mean, you could buy yourself a... I don't know. You could buy yourself a nice Chinese takeaway for that, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Right, Doc.
I'll go for the ancient one.
The ancient one, yeah. Which leaves you, Rev, with the... Monk from Extremis.
It's a goal!
We now go over to Tom Tyrrell at Wembley, where Jude Bellingham has equalised in the 5th minute of injury time. It's 2-2 to England-Belgium.
What's your feelings on the haemophore there?
I'm impressed.
It's all right, isn't it?
I'm recognising scarecrow parts on the body there from the rear shot, you know?
Oh, yes. Well, you're good at this. You're good at this, Rev.
It's the scarecrow's legs as well, isn't it? Trousers. I do actually think this one's really good.
That's a very large zip fly.
Well, I'm just pleased to see you.
I'm going in with a price. £2.90.
Oh, I'm going to say £1.30.
Oh, Doc's closer. It's £156.66.
On the right day, that could go for more, you know.
Well, it quite possibly could. It's genuinely quite good. But, I mean, if you think that is good, you better hold on to your socks because they're about to be blown straight off by the extremist monk.
That's pretty good, isn't it? That's...
Yeah, so, Doc, how much would you pay for that beauty?
Well, I wouldn't, but on any of these, but... £6.50.
I don't know, it's a very well-made figure of quite a rubbish character. That's the problem here that I'm experiencing. But if you're a completist, I mean...
If the person who made any of these is listening to the podcast, these guesses are not a comment on the quality of the figurines, of course. They're entirely based on how much we've got in our bank accounts.
I do like the way he seems to be sat there, stood on Mr. Greedy's kitchen table.
Yeah, it's a nice bit of yellow gingham going on.
What did Doc say for this one?
Oh, £6 something.
Yeah, I think you actually are quite warm with that. I'm going with £7.50, me.
Oh, well.
It was, in fact, £3.99.
Do you know what? I hope the person who bought it was happy with that, because that's a nice bargain price. If I'd have made that, though, I wouldn't be happy.
458, 576. It's about
five. Is this like at Christmas when you have to guess how much it costs to buy the 12 days of Christmas?
254, 267. Do you know what? It's closer than I thought. After Rev picked Bessie first, which was worth £350, Rev's team is worth £509. And Doc's is worth around about £420. So you won, Rev. Congratulations.
Well, I love this. Yeah. Right, there's your treat. You go into the factory where they make this rubbish.
What did we think, finally, of the season one trailer?
Oh, I still find it weird calling it season one, though.
I know, that's annoying, isn't it? Very jukeboxy, wasn't it?
How do you mean?
Well, lots of jukebox songs.
Oh, right, yes. Oh, was there?
There seemed to be.
Oh, yeah, they've got one of their mashups, haven't they? It's got a bit of David Bowie in it. And they got
changes
in it.
Unless that was meant to be, that was just for the, over the trailer. I got the impression that'll be played during the, episode. Imagine, I could cost a fortune, wouldn't it, to get the rights to that?
Well, it's Disney, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Disney money, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, it all looked very nice, although, as some people pointed out, that where the version that had been given to the... that had been put out on social media hadn't had the final HDR done to it. You put it in, so it wasn't put into... So some of the colours look a little bit washed out and stuff. And I saw somebody saying, yeah, but plants do look washed out in Cardiff.
I did like Ruby stepping on the butterfly thing, although it's that's a direct rip-off of a story from Tharg's Future Shocks in 2000 AD.
Yeah.
I liked the twist of her becoming an alien, but I can't condone the stepping on the fly snatches.
I did see somebody get very excited saying, oh, after all these years, it's finally doing a proper story with dinosaurs in it. And which obviously I was slightly offended at because, you know, one of the greatest Doctor Who stories ever told is the invasion of the dinosaurs. But also, I suspect that that's going to be very much like people were saying, oh, I can't wait, they're finally doing a story with the Mavellans in, only for it to be like 30 seconds in one of the earliest episodes.
Yeah, of course it is. I liked the scale of the things that we're going to see. I liked the old Bridgerton comment and the scale of that, and I liked the way things were looking. I've got to admit that I didn't get a feeling of action-packedness and excitement.
I think more importantly than the trailer, to be honest, which obviously looks pretty good and it looks fun, is the timing of the broadcast of new episodes, which will be landing on the iPlayer at midnight.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Obviously made some more people react to it controversially, I assume.
Yeah. Some people absolutely hate it. I'm sad about it, I think, as opposed to... I'm not angry about it or anything, it's just...
Yes, I think sad.
It's just one of those things, time marches on, things change. And I am sad because there is something... I know it's got loads of Disney money now, but it was always a British programme, so it's come out at British tea time or just after, and there's been that thing of everyone sitting down to watch it at the same time. And that's always been really lovely, especially in recent years with social media and everything. And so it's sad for me that we've lost that. I mean, I can see why people in Australia and people in America go, oh, it's great, it's on at a really good time for us for once. And... you know, fair enough, but it is sad. We have lost something, I think.
So a lot of people like to watch it hunched over their mobile, though. So, you know, this whole family viewing thing isn't necessarily everybody's bag. Some people want to hunch and let them.
I mean, people say, oh, just stay away from the internet until 7 o'clock on the next the following day. But... that assumes that they won't be announcing it on the one show, but they won't be spurting it all over the headlines and the tabloids.
Oh, yeah, I'll be in the papers and everything.
Outrage, a second black character appears in Doctor Who.
Will you be watching it at midnight, Rev?
Yes, yes, definitely. I like the idea. I've got no problem with it. I think it moves the programme forward, you know, in a way that matches the modern TV landscape, which is what Russell T. Davies is really good at.
The only thing that worries me slightly is how far they're going to go in pandering to United States tastes. I mean, admittedly, it's Disney. No, that doesn't make any difference, does it? I can't imagine within a few years that suddenly they'll decide, oh, it'll get a bigger audience in the United States if the Doctor goes around with a gun on his hip and shooting everyone. But it wouldn't entirely surprise me, and I wouldn't entirely trust Russell not to do that, just to pander to where the money's coming from.
Did that happen in Snow White?
Yeah, but don't forget that Disney also now controls Star Wars, where people are always killing each other.
They do. When Star Wars was bought by Disney, everyone was saying it was going to be cutesified and princessified, and then people had to point out, well, they do own Marvel, you know. So I think they try their best with these products, and they are 100% committed to it. It's still a BBC thing. Something like the Muppets, they don't seem to be able to get right whatever they do with it. They don't understand Muppets. But I think they might stand far enough away from Doctor Who. I mean, heaven forbid they use the phrase cloaking device.
If Disney are going to give Doctor Who a gun, at least and portray him as a stormtrooper where he never hits anyone.
Yeah.
So I noticed that Mrs. Flood was in the... I'm not sure if that was a throwback to Church on Ruby Road.
Yes, it was. Confusingly, there was loads of throwbacks to Church in...
Yeah, I think they're trying to show us an arc, aren't they? Well, we need to know that is in the cloak, don't we?
You've got the music, you've got the fun. 24 hours a day. We're with you making music. We're gonna help you on your way. I'll be with you.
Right then. Well, listeners, now that we've got round to it, the reason we've assembled today is to have one of our rare Whoseum episodes where we bring along an item of great significance to us and we talk about it. So, who wants to go first?
I'll jump in if you like, because I've done one of these for donkeys.
Okie dokie. So, in that case, computer, could you open the doors to the exhibition hall, please? Thank you. Oof, this place needs a dusting. Put some window lean on the shopping list, please, Mark. So, Rev, what have you brought us? Oh, can I hear the sound of wizened old French crones knitting away while a guillotine slashes up and down?
Well, it's very possible that the spirit of knit is very much about, because I am bringing with me not one item, but three. But loosely interconnected items of knittedness. Knitted items. Knitted by my own dear mother, witty little knitter that she was. I say was because one of the things that's happened to me between my incarnations on Diddly Dum is that I lost my parents. Very important people to me. I'm sure if anybody remembers in the past me telling tales and stories of childhood and life in the 70s and 80s, much as is the diddly-dum tapestry of presenters. We like talking about these things. So it's not something that's not been touched on before, my life. But there was a lack of merchandise about, and to be able to be indulged in some items that were about by my own mother was very exciting. Now, my mum knitted stuff. She made cakes, she did sewing as well, and she did all sorts of bits and bobs like that. That's what she did of an evening, because people didn't make podcasts then, I guess that's why. And one day I'd gone to the local library in Hedon, which is the place I live, not far from home. And there was a book there. This was about 1984, and there was a book called The Doctor Who pattern book.
Oh, right.
Now, do we remember this? Because I need to talk to you about something. It's probably lads talk. It's maybe a lack of knowledge of ladies, but there is something in that book that worried me at the time. And when I decided what I was bringing, I did think it's worried me still. Because you flick through this book and there was exciting things in it. You could have all six doctors at that point, I believe, and the master. You could get knitted outfits for your action men. There was canine cushion, all sorts of things.
Oh, yes. I love this book. Does it have a lovely canine kind of bag as well that you can...
Yes, there is a canine satchel, oh, yes. I believe it would have been labelled as. The one that worried me at the time, I'd have been 10 looking at this book, was something called Tegan's Boob Tube. Now, I was fairly certain I knew what a boob was, but what a 10-year-old boy was meant to make of a boob tube and how it fitted into Doctor Who was just insane. And now I think about it, it still is, because you go in shops and doesn't, you know, you see racks of clothes and things, and you might walk through the ladies' department and not linger, obviously.
Oh, God.
But
heavens, no.
When have you seen the label saying boob tube? What is it? You know? Not right, listeners, please. I want to know all about boob tubes. Anyway, the thing that really thrilled me in this book was the pattern and the wool required to make your own Tom Baker scarf, which is indeed a very long item. And indeed, my mum happily made me. Oh. And lovely memories that just opposite the library was Mr. Cohen's shop. Now, Mr. Cohen sold all the haberdashery stuff. And this is another weird thing. He always had a scary doll on the counter wearing knitted baby clothes. But next to it was this tall cylinder. And it looked like it was made out of, what are those sweets called? The ones that are sort of chocolate buttons with loads of hundreds and thousands on them. Are they the Jazzles, or I might have made that up. I'm still thinking of boob tubes. somebody will know what they're called, but that sort of effect, there were these towers of those like colours, and it wasn't until my mum purchased something off it one day that I found out that it wasn't a cylinder. It was lots of little discs with pins with coloured spherical heads that used to fascinate me.
Jazzles.
There you go, you see, I wasn't being filthy.
What's the name of this book again?
Oh, it's a Doctor Who pattern book.
Is it pattern book or knitting patterns?
No, it's pattern book, because there are other textile items in it, and you can find it as a downloadable PDF somewhere on Google.
So what do chocolate button jazzles come into the Tom Baker scarf?
Because there was this cylinder on Mr. Cohen's counter that looked like it was made out of the little hundred and thousandy type balls. Almost like when you go past a kebab shop and there's the big husk of meat rotating. Almost like an Arthur C. Clarke obelisk or something was there towering. Because, all right, I was 10 then, but my mum knitted. We went in that shop a lot from when I was 3 or 4 years old, and remember going shopping with her. So I used to look up at this totem of little coloured spheres, only to one day see Mr. Cohen lift a disc off the cylinder, and it was a little circular card packet with spherical coloured headed pins.
Yes, I remember them.
In it. Little wheel. So that was just one of the things of beauty. The wool was equally amazingly displayed in almost like a cube like shell structure, like you could clamber up like a ladder. You could probably buy one similar in IKEA now, but this was dusty wood. And he sounds like another country star, doesn't he? Dusty wood. Now, in the book, it lists the colours you need, things like brick red, rust, cream, grey. These were all pretty simple colours, but there was a bit of a disagreement on, well, I don't know who the disagreement was with. Was it with me? Was it with my mum? Was it with the book? It said beige. Now, this is where the confusion came, because the colour my mum bought that was beige, I understood why she called it beige, and it is what we would refer to as beige now. But I have heard some people see beige as more of a mustardy colour. And that is quite a prominent colour on the Doctor's scarf pre-season 18. And that's lacking from my scarf because I've got a more beige, a neutral colour. I'd almost say like a Nordic colour, which is probably good for my Viking ancestry. So my Doctor Who scarf's got a slightly different colour variation, but there you go, piece one of knitwear, which I did wear. If it was really cold when I was like 10 or 11 or 12 growing up, you could wrap it around your body like, well, it was called a body warmer back in my day. I believe they call it a gilet now.
Yes, yeah, body warmers.
A gilet? Oh, how sophisticated.
I would wrap that around me and you could put your coat over it and it kept you really warm and nobody knew it was just a really long scarf. But obviously I do occasionally wear it as a really long scarf. The best thing that I did with this scarf, when I went to London to meet Tom Baker and Louise Jameson and have my photo taken with them, I took the scarf and I sat in the middle of Tom and Leela and I said to Tom, I said, oh, do you mind if I put my scarf at my mum's age around your shoulder? And he went, no, go on. And then he held his arm to me and he went, link my arm, link my arm. And Louise Jameson did the same. So we were like jolly cockneys.
Oh.
And there I've got this photograph of me with my heroes wearing my mum's scarf. So it's a really amazing piece, is that. But then it continued.
That's lovely.
It continued to a point where I nearly made my mother blind, I believe. But I think when I was about 16, maybe 15, 16, again, my mum said that she used to read those magazines, Woman's Zone, Woman's Well. And she'd say there's an advert here to send off for knitting patterns of Dalek jumpers. Would you like one? So yeah. So of course she sent off for it. Now the issue was that it was lots of tiny little squares of colour and lots of different wools to change. And I don't know if you've ever seen like one of these knitters who does lots of colourful things when they've got all these colourful leads of wool leading off it. It was almost like the floor of a recording studio, the front room. For quite a long time, because my mum struggled with this pattern because of an evening in the light that was there in order for her to indulge in a hobby and my dad to watch a bit of telly, they had to balance the lighting out in the room so that they were both equally happy. And she could only manage like a few rows a night before her eyes gave up a little, which I do sympathise with now because my own eyes, I do struggle and can look like a scowling kangaroo when I'm trying to look at small print on a screen. But anyway, she carried on with this jumper. Now, the thing is, she started when I was about 15, 16, and all through sixth form, I don't believe I had the jumper. And I think when I first went to college, the jumper was indeed finished. But there is a difference between a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old. So, obviously, growth spurtage had happened, and it had to be altered slightly, but I've continued to have growth spurts well into my 50th year, but I still do wear the jumper.
Aww.
And this jumper was worn at another infamous day. I was wearing this jumper when on a train, read a book in the voice of Uncle Terence.
No!
Now, I've tried to find it. There is a photograph of myself and my friend. Now, me and my friend went to this Terence Dix thing as part of my friend's stag weekend celebrations. And what I said was I was wearing the jumper ironically, not because I was a geek. Now, the thing is that when I got there, it turns out there was lots of ironic people. So I wasn't alone in my thinking. But obviously, we went up to Terence and got our books signed. But he obviously remembered me having been wearing such a jumper, and he carried on his conversation with somebody else whilst he signed one of my friend's books. We then posed for a photo with Terence, of which Terence is not at all posing for the photo. In fact, it just looks like us standing in front of a bloke. But there is my mum's jumper in full view. Now, I hope I do find that photograph at some point, but what another glorious memory.
Oh, lovely.
The final one is a lot later. It does actually tie in with what Mark's been entertaining us with tonight in some ways, because I do believe when these custom-made Doctor Who figures came on eBay, at one point there was a ban. I think this is particularly in the Stephen Moffat era. There was a big thing with the BBC not liking people making money out of them. And eBay would block certain items, and I think custom figures are one of them. But another one was this item. My mum, we're in the computer age now. We've moved on from Woman's Realm, and we've moved on from Hedden Library. We're now in the digital age, and we found a knitting pattern online to make a Dalek, a little Dalek.
Oh!
About eight inches high. And there was a couple of different colour schemes. You could do it in a sort of, I'll say, it, I don't know what I'd name the colour on here, but it was supposedly the new bronze Dalek. It was a more natural colour, maybe, I'd say. And then there was a grey and black Dalek. Well, of course, she said, oh, I'll knit you one. I said, go on, which one do you want? So grey and black, obviously, my era. So she knitted this grey and black Dalek, and she said to me, she goes, this is the first and only one, though. Don't be telling any of your friends that I can make these, because this is going to be the only one I make. And it was the only one she made, but people were trying to sell those on eBay as well as the pattern, and that got banned. So my innocent mum created a banned item. Fancy that, contraband. So that Dalek still is still...
Oh, it's been such a nice story about her up until then, Rev, and that's just, she's just, you know, my opinion of her's plummeted now.
Well, I don't know, it's like, who do you think you are? There's always that hint of darkness, isn't there? But there is my trilogy of knitting as basically a story of my fandom of Doctor Who, really, going from this excitable 10-year-old into a teenager still, you know, hugging on to Doctor. That was at the point when it was getting repeated on BBC Two, I think, when those repeats came on. Back into its rebirth in the early noughties. And my mum with me all along the way. And I'd like them in the Whoseum mostly as a tribute to my mum.
Yes. Lovely. That's brilliant.
I have a couple of very vivid memories of tales of your mum, Rev. The first one is how you used to go on the bus to town together. And used to get Doctor Who Weekly, and you on the bus home, you'd be clutching it to your chest.
Oh yeah,
you get home, you just sit there at the kitchen table and just was it? You were mainly staring at the pictures, weren't you?
Well, yeah, because I couldn't. There was quite a lot of text in it, and there was some quite difficult words. So I wasn't really reading it or understanding it. I was just looking at the monsters and the pictures. Yeah.
And the other one was it your mum who, not exactly knitting, perhaps it's more appropriate to say crocheting, crocheted a question mark on the inside pocket of your jacket?
Yeah. She embroidered a question mark into the inside pocket of my goth overcoat, which I love. She did a bit of a tailoring job on it to stitch some pockets up and stuff, and I'd say, oh, put a question mark on it, which she'd done. But yeah, then when I got my first house, and me being a bit of a, you know, my first bachelor pad wanted it to be a bit designery and stuff. So I had an orange and cream and white front room. And I wanted orange throws and cream covers. No messing around, just simple cream cushion covers. The mum made me some. And she brought them around and put them on the sofa. And she said, turn them over. And I turned these cushions over, and she'd embroidered question marks onto the back of my cushions.
That was it, yes. Mums will do anything, won't they, for you?
They're brilliant, aren't they, mums?
They're the best.
Oh, well, splendid. Well, in that case, we'll put these... Are you presenting us with the book, Rev, or the actual knitted items?
I think we need a bit of a display. We need Mr. Cohen's, a picture of Mr. Cohen's shop there, don't we? And maybe a bit of a replica of the counter.
There used to be a character on the Goon Show called Cohen. And someone would walk into a shop and he would say, in a very strong Jewish accent, hello, I'm Cohen. And the Peter Sellers would say, oh, well, I'll wait till you get back then. I thought it was vaguely amusing.
Oh, dear. I wouldn't be surprised if my mum cracked that joke.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Cohen.
Cohen who?
Cohen, answer the door.
So, well, what we've done here, Rev, just for you, we have created in this apps within the exhibition hall an exactly detailed, precisely accurate replica of Mr. Cohen's shop.
It's sensational.
And you'll see that on his counter, he has your your little column of jazzles, whatever they were called. And also on his counter, you will see an open glass display case. So would you like to place your book and your knitted items in there?
Yes. Absolutely, yeah. Very good.
And just close the case, see it up.
But very splendid they look.
The music sounds best on Piccadilly Radio.
So, my turn now. This is where I show my age, alas. I've mentioned before that my most vivid memories of Doctor Who from my childhood are much less of watching the actual series. I'm almost the opposite of Ian Levine in so many ways, where he seems to have a photographic memory of all the programmes he watched. I don't. Instead of remembering the actual series being broadcast, I far more remembered what was happening between the series on television, in the, what you might call the closed season, buying books, buying LPs, sending off to join the Doctor Who Appreciation Society, etc. And in 1976, Artist Publishing Limited released a giant-sized book for Marks and Spencer, of all places. Someone you'd expect more likely to be selling Tom Baker underpants than this sort of merchandise. And it was the Doctor Who and the Daleks omnibus. Weighing in at £2.5, it was a coffee table book in the truest sense, in that when you weren't reading it, it could easily double as a coffee table. It was so large. The adjective you see most used about this book seems to be lavish. If you open it to the flyleaf, you're immediately struck by the original colour artwork within. And of course, being the Daleks, this is, as ever, the Doctor and the Daleks omnibus presented by Terry Nation. Although when you reach the target, the title page, it's Doctor and the Daleks omnibus edited by Terry Nation. Now, a friend of the podcast, Simon Brett, for it is he, a few years ago wrote a very good piece for Warp Warp magazine volume 4 about this very book, which I think he called the Pollen Street Irregulars. I think Pollen Street was a street somewhere among the back streets of Soho, where you had all these, you know, film studios and art collectives. And I'm sure Simon will forgive me if I filch a few details from his very detailed article here and there. Much of the theme is, in fact, quite Terry Nation Dalek annuals. You've got things like a piece such as The Seventh Galaxy, which is where the Daleks live. The Dalek planet Skaro is situated in the Seventh Galaxy. And then we start going to this thing they used to do in these days. It lies far beyond the constellation Andromeda. Andromeda's a galaxy. A constellation is things like Plough, isn't it? And it's estimated to cover over 100,000 million stars, making it similar in size to our own Milky Way. Now, personally, I don't know if when you were boys like me, guys, you, at the front of your exercise books, you would put your name, your street name, your town name, England, United Kingdom, Europe, the world, the Milky Way, the universe. Or surely all it takes is a childhood doing that to understand what the difference between a solar system and a galaxy and a Milky Way is. But there we are. Lots of photos, set photos of the Genesis of the Daleks, camera scripts of the Genesis, which I have to admit I wasn't particularly interested in. I think they were more filler. The bulk of the content comprises slightly abridged versions of the text of Genesis of the Daleks and of Planet of the Daleks, interleaved with a most gorgeous full-page original colour art. And according to Simon, you've got this group of, I think it was five or six artists who set up something called the General Illustration Company Limited, where they would be creating artwork for the advertising and publishing trade, movie posters, storyboarding, that sort of thing. And it seems to be an example of illustrators, and obviously Simon is one of these himself, getting together to have more power in the trade. I think we've all heard this thing about, early in the life of 2000 AD, they were very careful not to give artists the credit for their own work for fear that they'd either use it to get a better job elsewhere or that they'd try to claim copyright on it, which I think is why so many of our best comic artists buggered off to the USA, isn't it? So you've got guys like, I think they were called Ivan Rose, Tony Phoebe, Mike Francis, I think he says, as if he's not reading his other piece of paper, Roger Towers, Ian Selman, all with slightly different artistic specialisms. Some of them specialised in pencilled work, colour-flooded panels, more graphic pieces, and clients would come directly to them rather than through agents, which obviously meant that they didn't lose whatever it is, 10% or whatever. I think there was a kind of community of illustrators in this, what was this street called? Pollen Street. Tony Phoebe, in fact, was a family friend of Terry Nation, which I wouldn't be surprised if that's why, that's how he got hold of them. And in fact, Terry Nation was godfather to Tony's brother. And so then you've also got things like The Anatomy of a Dalek, where you've got a double spread.
Oh, it's amazing, The Anatomy of a Dalek.
Beautiful, isn't it?
Pretty much the same one that's later used in the technical manual.
Things like you get with things like Look and Learn, where they do, you know, a sort of cut through a motorbike and show you how the engine works and things like that.
Yeah.
So it looks as if a Dalek's casing was packed full from head to toe with lots and lots of bits and pieces. Makes you wonder, how exactly did Ian get inside it? Or the Doctor when he's going, I am the master! Hey, you could do with these in podcasting, hostility sensors. These are able to detect aggressive attitudes in all life forms.
Laser 558.
I mean, why does a Dalek need to sense aggression? Because they just shoot anything anyway.
That's true.
Aggressive or not. So, you know, what does that matter? They could have something else in there. They could be picking up Piccadilly Radio with them or something. I want to point out, I think people might... I have found the one lousy illustration here, which I'll come on to in a second.
But which one's that?
Well, I'll come on to that in a second, because a few pages... So on the PDF of it, it's page 90, but it's somewhere around there in the book. But you've got a lovely double-page spread, which is the second double pages of Planet of the Daleks. We've got a picture here that is one of two things.
Where the Third Doctor is sort of almost like a scarecrow...
No, well, it could be. It could be the Third Doctor and two Thals having a good old rake around inside a Dalek. Or it could be the Bee Gees. I'm not sure. But it is absolutely stunning piece of artwork with a brilliant use of light and colour and just, you know, drama and perspective. And I said, is that Joe looking very, scared in the background? Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, click down to what is on here. On the PDF is page 93, but in the book is page 102. What is this? It already looks like, you know, when you buy a book at a jumble sale or a car boot sale and some kids have drawn on it with a pencil. That someone's done that.
This is the living plants throwing spores at the TARDIS, isn't it?
Someone's just had a good old scribble with the 2B pencil on it. Is that the TARDIS?
Yeah.
It looks like it's been made out of Lego that was available in the Lego kit of the time, i.e. not really much. That's filler, that. I mean, I love the yellow circle. I like the plants, but goodness sake, what's going on? It looks like that has been drawn by the kind of people who would make action figures and sell them on eBay.
Yes, it's quite scandalous, isn't it?
But... that is just so we can have one bad line of dialogue in the review, because you can't go wrong with the artwork. It's just too good. It's stunning. And the amount of Marks and Spencers, the amount of money that's been spent on this, there's probably more colour in this than any Doctor Who annual.
Mm. And there's stuff which I've never entirely liked, which is where they've got paintings underneath the text. which sometimes magazines can do. You think, well, you can't always read it.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's the printing technology, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nowadays, you can fade it out on Photoshop, but these days, like it's page 61, is that with the very hard to read the black against red pants.
Yeah, but I do like 41, which is the all the mutos being made to carry the radioactive stuff into the Thal rocket on page 41. We'll put scans of these pages on our Tumblr page, listeners, yeah, which you can find links to at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com.
It's quite ghoulish, that, isn't it? Because you've got these sort of like horsemen of the apocalypse clad mutas, but the guard, the car's got a sort of almost swastika symbol on there as well.
I mean, I remember having already read the Target novelizations in little paperback form. I don't think I bothered to read any of the text in these. I just, almost like you, Rev, just sat there looking at the pictures a lot of the time.
Smell the paper as well. I know exactly what this paper smells like.
Mmm. There's a nice one on page 135, which is sort of the exploding ice cano.
There's a couple of examples that you can see on page 57 and what probably is 66. There's some nice little bits there where they leave some of it to the imagination of the viewer, in that the Daleks on this page, they're still are a loose sketch as it fades out to the bottom right corner of the piece of work, keeping your eye going very much to the centre of the of an explosion, which is very clever. And very nicely laid out, but a nice bit of unfinished stuff. And the other one I mentioned was a picture of Tom Baker's Doctor, where again it's not like the versions of Tom Baker that was in the annuals, where you're thinking, who the hell's this?
Who is that? Why has Tom Baker suddenly grown a moustache?
It's a man with a scarf and a big hat. It is Tom Baker, but again, it's sort of very abstract image, and then with the shape behind it, it's almost like the Vertigo poster.
And then the other one I like is that right at the end, they've got another a cut through, whatever they call them, this Daleks deep space cruiser, which apparently I think some of the numbers on it, they're supposed to be all wrong for some reason.
They used to do things like that in the Eagle as well, didn't they? In the Eagle comic, they used to do these cutaways, often of the damned airships.
But right at the end, the one of the Daleks just advancing across this field and exterminating, that's absolutely gorgeous, isn't it?
Mm.
And he wouldn't have been, of course, I wouldn't have paid for it. I'd have just looked meaningfully at my mother. But it wouldn't have been a cost of fortune, this, would it? Even in, whatever it cost in 1970, whatever, would be peanuts now with inflation, but 1976. But it wouldn't have been a great deal. And I just used to live for things like this when the TV show wasn't on. 76, so that's what? It's would have been sometime between the second and third Tom Baker seasons, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this almost makes me a bit sad because, like Mark was saying about how, with the advent of episodes of Doctor Who being dropped, you're losing that sort of like, weekly opportunity to sit with everybody and be excited. They do not produce things like this anymore for kids or anybody. This amazing, this lavish, with this much care and love in it. It's something that's gone.
So, I shall put this away in a display case here. Volume 4 of Warp Warp is still available to order online at warpofwarp.co.uk. That's Warp, starts with a VW, of course. And there's a wealth of stuff in Simon's piece that we haven't even touched on here. He does some quite in-depth interviews with the various illustrators. And because he's an illustrator himself, they seem to open up to him. And of course, listeners, if you haven't got one of these omnibuses yourself and fancy seeing a download of it, don't try emailing us at diddlydumpodcast@yahoo.co.uk because we won't send you one. No. No, I'm sorry.
Piccadilly helps you through the day. It helps you make it through the day.
There is nothing like it.
You'll find that everything's okay when Piccadilly helps you through the day.
And yes, that was Kenny Everett. Now, Mark's choice of something to present to the Hooseum makes me glad that when they originally built the Hooseum, back in the mists of time, they went big. So, Mark, what are you bringing along?
Well, the Hooseum's been through quite a lot of trauma recently, hasn't it? What with Ian Winterton's terrible plumbing.
Out of the flood! Gosh, yeah.
Having to jettison rooms. And I'm slightly worried that the dimensions of it are starting to shift a bit. So I thought what we need to do is some block transfer computation.
Oh, right.
So when I was out in Cardiff recently, I found the perfect subject, the National Museum of Wales. Now, I thought if I could bring it into the museum, if you can just get the mice to just...
Mice? You really don't care if our listeners' carefully constructed, willing suspension of disbelief is ruined, do you, Mark?
Yeah.
Right, well, even now, up in the gallery of the colossal glass dome of the exhibition hall, the full complement of the Hooseum's service robots have gathered, ready to unscrew the dome. OK, boys, take up the strain. Off you go. You careful with all that stained glass portraying the life of Verity Lambert. It's very expensive, that. Very historical. Oh, dear. Oh, well, you can't make an omelette without breaking glass, can you? Right, there we are. The dome is now detached from its moorings, and high above the museum, the diddly-dum blimp has even now lowered a rope and hooked onto the weather vane atop the dome. And up in the gondola of the blimp, at the controls, is the reassuring presence of the old soothsayer. Whip it, leader, to trap one. Take it away, old soothsayer.
Hold step on it, lads. Strap yourselves in. We're in for a bumpy ride.
And, oh, look at all those stars in the sky. And now, flying in the National Museum of Wales itself, we have a whole fleet of blimps loaned to us temporarily from our fellow podcasts around the world. Oh, just look at their colourful names painted on the side of the blimps. There's the cutaway bunker blimp with its gas envelope made entirely from papier-mâché copies of Warp Warp magazine. Oh, who's that blimp lagging behind? Oh, it's the All of Time and Space guys again. And what's that one? Exeter District Council Recycling Centre. All right. There's the 42 to Doomsday blimp. Have they got a blimp in Australia? Or, hang on, there's a note fluttering down from them. It's a bloody airship, you pommy bastards. Oh, charming. Right, I think we're just exactly over the dome now. Lower away, please. Mark, this is an event of huge national pride for your compatriots, the people of Wales. Get on the pipe organ, quick. Give the occasion some momentous welly.
Hooray!
Thank you. And the National Museum of Wales is now safely ensconced within the Hoosier Exhibition Hall.
Ah.
Now, Mark.
Yes.
If we enter this museum, you have assured me, haven't you, that we're going to have no problems with recursive occlusion. A museum inside a museum.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be fine. I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? Your confident assurances comfort me. Shall we go in?
Yes, let's go in. It's, because, in fact, as we ascend the stair, you may recognise this from Vincent and the Doctor, which is where the Vincent van Gogh exhibition was.
Oh, is it? Right.
Yes, and also the outside and the inside, in fact, are used for the Big Bang.
Oh, yes. So this is the thing with the stairs with the bronze statue at the top.
Yes, these are the steps which the 11th Doctor pegs out on. Oh, and if you go through there, there's a lovely exhibition with some Rodin sculptures in it. Now, this is one of the things that, as well, not only is this a great Doctor Who location, but it's actually got loads of other cool stuff in it. And so you've got a lovely big Rodin bronze of the Kiss in here.
Ooh,
and
we've done all right here, haven't we?
And whenever I see this, much like Mr. Cohen's shop display outside reminds Rev of his mum. Indeed, this Rodin's Kiss sculpture reminds me of my mum, because I have a lovely photo of the last time I visited with my mother, with my mother staring prudently down at the kissing couple with a Kenneth Williams style expression on her face. And always makes me very happy. I always remember her when I see this. And there's actual Van Goghs in here as well, Van Gogh paintings.
I had no idea that Rodin lived long enough to sculpt the Eighth Doctor and Grace Holloway kissing.
Mm. But yeah, this whole place also was the... it's appeared in the Planet of the Dead, the Lazarus Experiment, the Forest of the Night, Pilot, Oxygen and Extremis. Wow. So
whenever they need something large and marbly.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So this is where they would have had this foyer bit down here, which you can see, which says this is where they would have had the exhibition where young Amy was standing at the start of the Big Bang looking at the exhibits, and the Doctor swipes her her drink.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
Much witty behaviour with a mop.
Yes, indeed. It's just a magnificent building, and it always reminds me. It was either this, you see, because I visited a couple of places when I was in South Wales recently, and it was either this or Caerphilly Castle, and I thought Caerphilly Castle's just too big. It'd just be ridiculous. There's a limit, isn't there?
Well, Mark texted me the castle circumference, and it turned out to be only 1/16th of an inch larger than the circumference of our dome here, so it just wouldn't have been practical, no matter how carefully we'd try to fit it in.
Caerphilly Castle, obviously, that's where the Almost People and the, what do you call it, the...
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Gangers.
Yeah, that one. And I think Robot Sherwood was filmed there. Bits of Heaven Sent, Vampires of Venice. So lots of Doctor Who stuff's been recorded around the area. But also, I don't know if you remember, but on my very first podcast, Caerphilly itself was the home of a 40-foot giant animatronic
gorilla
ape called the Mighty Mong.
Of course!
Who features in my first ever appearance on this podcast.
Just found a giant gorilla as well today, haven't they? A big model one. Isn't that weird?
What's that, sorry?
In the news today, a giant model gorilla's been found abandoned in a...
Really?
A lay-by, yeah.
Nothing carefully, surely.
I don't know, just very coincidental.
Bizarre. But Caerphilly Castle proved too unwieldy to get in through the into the Hoosier. So we'll have to settle for having a Hoosier within a Hoosier.
Right, well, in that case, how splendid. Well, what we will do is we will we'll get these service robots to secure the National Museum of Wales to the foundations of the Hoosier. You're sure that the Welsh government won't object to us stealing one of their national buildings here, Mark? You did ask, didn't you?
Worked for Elgin.
Well, my dad used to be on the council, so I'm sure it'd be fine.
Oh, well. Right, so in that case, let's leave the National Museum of Wales and... oh, we're back in it again.
Oh.
Mark, how carefully did you research the recursive occlusion on this?
Well, I watched Legopolis, but I didn't watch it all the way through. I just saw the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll find our way out by the next some of the next podcast listeners.
Seems to keep getting darker, doesn't it, every time we go out?
If you look at the staircase above us, David Bowie seems to be singing on it. Must be performing a trailer for the podcast.
Oh, do I hear the sound of multiple Zimmer frames approaching? Oh, who's this coming down the corridor? Why, if it isn't the Piccadilly Radio Jingles team. Have you all come to bid us farewell? Take it away, boys.
We thank you for sharing your day with us. For the best in music with a smile. Whatever the time of day or night, your music and your friends. Your music and your friends.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Diddly Dum podcast. Find us on Twitter at @diddly_dum or on our blog at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com, where you can find links to us on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, Facebook, Instagram, and Mastodon. Or email us at diddlydumpodcast.yahoo.co.uk. Diddly Dum.
Your music and your friends.